Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, 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 it's Monty. Welcome to the Rockcast.
Sorry, this won't last long.
Well, here we go with the first episode of 2015. The holidays are behind us, and thank God for that. I about lost my mind over Christmas and New Year's, running around trying to make everybody happy. And of course, on New Year's Eve, I did what I always do. I carried on the yearly tradition of sitting at home and doing absolutely nothing.
Loser!
I find no reason to go out and celebrate and party just because I have to change the date on my checks now. I know that probably sounds like a buzzkill, but December 31st is just like any other day to me. Except that everyone wants to force me to stay up till midnight and play Twister.
Excruciating.
Of course, what I usually end up doing is watching TV, which is unfortunate because it's one of the worst nights of TV the whole year. You got stuff like Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve. And I know what you're saying. Hey, didn't Dick Clark die? Well, yeah. But don't worry, Dick's legacy of bringing mediocre, lip-syncing musicians to the public is carried on these days by Ryan Seacrest. And after being reminded how much popular music sucks, well, I was ready for a brand new year of podcasts. So without further delay, sit back and enjoy almost an hour of commercial-free entertainment.
We can't wait.
You're welcome. If you heard my last episode, you'll know it was my year-end special. I told you what my favorite songs of the year were, I told you what I loved and hated about last year, and well, basically it was all about me.
As usual.
But here on episode 149, it's time to get back to you, the listener, and find out what you have to say. Later I'll be reading your emails and answering your questions. But lately, I have fallen behind on your top 10s. And the top 10 playoffs are coming up in March, and so I thought I better get with it and read some of those now. And the first one is from Ed Scythe in Arizona.
Fuzzy-headed liberal.
Now, Ed and I disagree on a lot of things, but I met Ed at the last Galactic Cowboy reunion show in Houston, and he is just a great guy.
This guy's a radical.
So despite just how wrong Ed is politically, he is my buddy. And we're friends on Facebook, and the other day Ed told me that he read this thing where somebody said on Facebook, everything David Lee Roth did after Van Halen sucked.
Hi-ya!
And it got Ed to thinking, hey, I should do a top 10 list of the top 10 singers whose success hinged on the guitar player.
Oh!
And his list starts out at number 10 with Billy Idol and Steve Stevens. And yeah, I agree. Billy Idol was the big rock star, but if you were a musician, you were like, yeah, Steve Stevens is the man. And I unfortunately didn't see Billy Idol until Steve Stevens left the band. And it wasn't nearly as good. In fact, the guitar player he had, I don't even know what the guy's name was, but he actually fell down on stage. Now, number 9 is an interesting one. Ed says, from Mr. Big, Eric Martin and Paul Gilbert. Ed says, To Be With You was a monster hit, but this group never would have had the chance to write it if not for Paul Gilbert's insane chops and Makita Power Drill endorsement. Yeah, Ed, I'm not real sure how the song To Be With You came about, but I am sure of one thing. I wish they would have never written it at all.
Whoa!
That has to be one of the cheesiest hair metal sellout ballads of all time. I mean, I know myself, I could have never written or been a part of any sappy song like that, just so I could make some money.
So
hey, what is this?
Easy to love.
wimpy.
Okay, so we all make mistakes. Getting back to Ed's list. At number 8, a singer whose success hinged on the guitar player, Jeff Tate.
Ah!
Ed says there's no doubt that Tate had the pipes, but Queensryche music has gotten progressively worse since DeGarmo left and Tate took on the primary artistic and writing responsibilities. Tate really didn't write as much of the good stuff as he thinks he did. Well, I understand what you're saying, Ed. And in the past, I haven't had a lot of good things to say about Jeff Tate's solo stuff or his new version of Queensryche. However, somebody told me not too long ago that they recently met Jeff Tate and that he told them that he actually liked Galactic Cowboys. So that being said, I'll be damned if I'm going to let anyone come on my show and criticize a cool guy like Jeff Tate.
The audacity.
At number 7, Ed says that Phil Anselmo of Pantera owes his fame to Dimebag Darrell. And yeah, that's hard to argue with. Phil was great and he was perfect for that band, but like Ed says, Super Joint Ritual, down, come on.
Please.
At number 6, it's Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora. And Ed says, this duo is a great example of the Lennon-McCartney syndrome. On their own, their output is very meh, but when they collaborate, admit it, there's a lot of great music. Okay, well listen, I love you, Ed, but if you ever compare Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora to Lennon-McCartney ever again, I swear to God I will fly to Arizona and beat you with the bloody severed arm of Barack Obama.
That's just how white folks will do you.
All that said, at number 5, it's Stephen Piercy and Warren DeMartini of Rat. And Ed says, admit it, you never liked the sound of Piercy's voice. Why?
Well, I admit, I don't know.
Because he's a whiny little shit, that's why.
That's correct.
All right, well, I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one, Ed. I may be in the minority, but I actually kind of like Piercy's voice. Now, I've heard some live audio from him recently, and yeah.
I mean, it's horrible.
But back in the day, he was the identity of Rat. And since he's not in the band anymore, that rat is a dead rat. They are done. But every now and then, I still kind of enjoy some of their older tunes.
Showdown's gonna
At number 4, Ed thinks that Scott Stapp of Creed owes his career to Mark Tremonti. Man, yeah, I'd have to agree. I hated Creed, but I've actually liked a couple of songs since he left, from stuff that Tremonti has done on his own and with Alter Bridge. And of course, I always just thought Stapp was kind of an Eddie Vedder wannabe. Always doing the
I love that.
But whatever, moving on. Number 3 is Don Dokken and George Lynch. And yeah, I'd kind of agree with that because what I liked about Dokken was Lynch's tone. But Lynch didn't exactly set the world on fire with Lynch Mob, and so maybe they kind of needed each other. But yeah, I'll kind of agree with that, and I'll move on to number 2, where Ed says the success of David Lee Roth's solo career hinged on the guitar playing of Steve Vai.
No!
Well, yeah, Steve Vai was and is amazing. But that whole band was great back then. They had Billy Sheehan on bass.
Ah, yes!
They had Greg Bissonette on drums, and they were amazing. And as a musician, I was totally into that. But back in the late 80s, I don't know that the average concert-goer, CD-buying person was that concerned about the band.
No.
Dave had a huge personality, and as you recall, he was having hit songs like California Girls and Just a Gigolo. And that crap wasn't even heavy at all.
Yeah!
So I don't know how much Dave really owes to Steve Vai, but he owes a lot to Eddie Van Halen.
Ooh!
And finally, at number 1, Ed from Arizona says that Ozzy Osbourne owes his solo career success to Randy Rhoads. Ed says that a suicidal Ozzy took a chance on a skinny kid from California who revolutionized the genre.
I mean, they've even interviewed.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Ozzy has always had great guitar players and a pretty good manager.
Shut up!
But good list, Ed. You've given us all a lot to think about, and you are in the playoffs.
Extremely exciting.
Well, since that went so well, I think I'm going to read another list.
Please, God, no. Don't do any more.
Well, all right. And this next one is from another good friend of the show. It's from Paul Morgan. And apparently Paul spends a lot of time on the road because he has sent me his top 10 favorite food places you are guaranteed to see as you hit the road. And his list starts out at number 10 with a place back east called Wawa. And I have never heard of Wawa, nor have I heard of his number 9 choice, Sheetz. However, I have heard of Jeff Sheetz, and he's awesome, so I'm assuming the restaurant is too.
That's possible!
Number 7 is a place I am familiar with. It's called Hardee's. And number 7 is a fast food chain they have out on the West Coast called In-N-Out Burger. And yeah, I mean, who among us doesn't like the old In-N-Out once in a while?
I know I do!
Number 6 is a fried chicken place called Bojangles. And I've never heard of Bojangles, but I love me some fried chicken.
Oh, yeah!
Here in the Midwest, we've got Popeyes, which is awesome. We've got Church's, which I seldom go to. And KFC. And for me, it's got to be extra crispy and all dark.
Mm-hmm, I know that's right.
Now, number 5 on Paul's list is apparently a burger joint called Circle K. And when I lived in Phoenix growing up, they had Circle K's, but they were a convenience store. So I'm assuming this is different.
Duh.
However, I am aware of Paul's number 4 choice, Dunkin' Donuts. Because I have never, ever refused a donut. If you offer it to me, I will eat it. And even though I've never done heroin, I'm pretty sure that whatever is in heroin is the same thing that they put inside of donuts. Because, trust me, they're as equally addicting as any drug out there.
Seriously hardcore information.
Number 3 is a place I ate at many times while on tour. It's the Waffle House. And Paul says, modern-day diner, try the cheeseburger. And I don't know if you're right or not, Paul, because the only thing I ever ate at the Waffle House was the steak and eggs, and it was yummy.
Delicious!
Number two is International House of Pancakes, also known as IHOP. And at number one on Paul's list of favorite food places on the road, it's Cracker Barrel. Well, good list, Paul, but you know, for some reason, man, I'm not really into Cracker Barrel. I think it's those plates that they serve the food on. Something about a fork scraping on a metal plate that kind of makes me feel like nails on a chalkboard. But I gotta say, the place we ate at more than any other restaurant the entire time we were on tour was Denny's. You could find them anywhere. They were always open. If you wanted lunch or breakfast or whatever at midnight, you could have it. And they had hundreds of items on the menu, but I always got the same thing every time. The moon's over my hammy.
Unbelievable!
Oh, yeah, and it was awesome. Even though it was basically just an egg sandwich with some ham thrown on there.
What's so remarkable about that?
But not nearly as awesome as you are, Paul, because you are going to the playoffs. Well, since this episode is all about you guys, I think it's time to answer some of your questions with a little Ask Monty. And the first one is from Chris in Baltimore, who says, "Hey, Monty, how's life treating you?"
That's very deep, don't you think?
Wow, Chris, hitting me with a tough one right off the bat. How is life treating me? Well, I guess I'd have to say life is like the girls I knew in high school. They kind of stood back, looked at me, and laughed.
That's so pathetic.
Like usual, I've had my share of ups and downs here lately. I didn't work at all over the holidays, which is awesome, but at the same time, I didn't make any money. So now to start the new year, I'm pretty much broke and as useless as nipples on a man.
Wow!
Yeah, which raises an interesting point. Why do men have nipples at all?
I don't know!
On a woman, they're beautiful and sensitive and they can help feed a baby. But on men, they're just stuck on there for no reason, and if my wife tries to touch them, I get irritated.
Well, yeah.
But enough about my nipples, it's time to talk about my cat, Mr. Kitty. I mean, talk about useless. And I was even kind of hoping he'd be the kind of cat that would lay around and do absolutely nothing all day, but no. His whole purpose in life now seems to be to annoy me, and the honeymoon is over between me and Mr. Kitty. Not only is he going to destroy every piece of furniture in the house, he also seems to be on a mission to take a crap on every inch of carpet that we have. And sure, he's got a litter box. I think we've bought four of them now. But he's such a head case that, he doesn't really want to seem to use those. And the madder I get, the more Lindsay says, but he's so cute. Yeah, well, not anymore. In fact, I've changed his name from Mr. Kitty to Mr. Shitty. Now, that may seem cruel, but believe me, a name has never been more appropriate. But thanks for your question, Chris.
Complain about one thing or another or another or another or another or another.
Recently, I've had several questions about some different bands. For instance, Joseph Glenn said, "Hey, Monty, have you ever liked anything by the Spin Doctors?" And the answer to that, Joseph, is no. I always hated everything I heard by them, but then again, all I ever heard were the singles. But it was during that era with Hootie and the Blowfish and all that crap, and no, I did not like them. Plus, their singer just kind of came off like a big hippie. And he is also a dead ringer for Hunter Pence of the Giants, and so no, I will never like him.
Most illogical.
I also got some questions about Kiss from Stephen Elliott, who said, "Hey, Monty, are you only an old school fan of Kiss with the original band, or are you a fan of their entire body of work?" Well, Stephen, mainly old school. I loved the live albums, I liked Love Gun, Rock and Roll Over, and Destroyer. After that, it was kind of hit and miss. I think the band they've got now is probably more talented than they were in the early days. Like, Eric Singer is a lot better drummer than Peter Criss ever was. But then again, there's just something about the older tunes that I enjoy more.
That's almost profound.
Steven also wanted to know if I had a favorite Kiss song. And, well, no, not really. But if I were to pick one off the top of my head, it would probably be Parasite. I love the chorus and I love that riff. Steven also wanted to know whose idea it was for Galactic Cowboys to cover I Want You for the Kiss tribute album. And yeah, Eric Singer and Gene Simmons actually kind of contacted us at the time, because Eric is actually Ben Huggins' cousin. And so that's kind of how we got involved, but I was the one who actually suggested that we do the song I Want You. I figured we could do some harmony vocals at the beginning and make the whole thing a little heavier. And besides, when I went through their catalog, it was kind of hard finding anything that we could do lyrically, because I figured most of our fans wouldn't exactly want to hear us singing Meet You in the Ladies Room or Christine 16.
No!
Yeah, you couldn't get away with that now, but it's funny to think that bands used to sing about underage girls all the time in the past, and everyone was like, yeah, that rocks. She's only 17. So anyway, we ended up recording I Want You. Gene said he really liked it, but he couldn't use it because we weren't a big enough name. And if that was the case, why even have us record it at all? I don't know. But that's what was up with that, and thanks for the question, Steven. Now, as always, I got some great questions from Jimmy G in Chicago. And first, he wanted to know if I had heard about this Fender Didi Ramone signature bass. And if so, he wanted to know what my opinion was.
We're all sitting here with bated breath.
Yes, I too have a famous cousin, Didi Ramone. And I also saw the signature bass that they put out for him now that he's dead. And they're white, and I think they look pretty cool. But I doubt if I'll be buying one, A, because I can't afford it, and B, I've already got a white Fender bass. But if Fender would like to give me one, I would promote the hell out of it.
There's no way that happens.
Jimmy's next question is, hey, Monty, have you ever considered that your music and art have touched thousands of people in a deeply emotional way? Well, Jimmy, I have thought about it, and I've also received email over the years from people who have told me that my music meant a lot to them, and that they either enjoyed my art or were kind of disturbed by it. And it's always a great feeling to know that people appreciate what you've done. But it's also weird because, you know, I'll see people on Facebook quoting the lyrics from songs that we recorded 25 years ago. And they'll tell me, I still listen to those albums and I still love songs like Speak to Me and My School. And I think, you know, that's so amazing, because when I think about those songs, I remember sitting on a couch in a living room of a little apartment. And I'm sitting there with a guitar and I just start singing, going back to my school. And I had no idea if anything would ever come of it or if anyone would ever like it, but it's really cool to know that there's a few people that still do. And so, yes, Jimmy, it's great to know that there was some people out there that I genuinely touched.
Oh, that is so nice.
But, of course, there were a lot of people that I didn't touch, and a few of them I wish I could have. Ho, ho! Yeah, I'm kidding, of course, but moving on to Jimmy's next question, he says, "Hey, Monty, what is your preference as a performer or as an audience member during a live show? Do you like fewer tunes but talking to the audience in between every tune, or more tunes and less chat?"
What a crazy question!
Well, I like a certain amount of talking in between songs because it's interaction with the band. Like, if you're watching a band, it's nice to know that they know you're there and they're not just ignoring you. But I'm definitely not a fan of too much talking, and I can give you a couple of examples. The first one is when I was on tour with this Christian guy named Morgan Cryer, and it was back in the 80s, and he would preach in between, like, every song. And it's fine to let the audience know what song you're doing or what it's about, but he would just go on and on for like 10, 15 minutes. And I would just stand there like, okay, come on, come on. And I would finally just walk off the stage and wait. And then he would finally start the song and we'd come out and we'd jam through it. And then he'd start talking again. And I just barely built up a sweat and some kind of momentum. And it was time to wait again. And maybe that's what the Christian people in the crowd wanted, but I just hated that. But I've seen some other bands that kind of overdo it on the talking between songs, and one of those that I will never forget was Pantera. And it must have been around 96 or 97 because they were on the Trendkill tour. And I started going to see those guys when they were playing clubs in the late 80s. But this time I was sitting in an 18,000 seat arena. And me and Wally Farkas were sitting way at the top in the rafters looking down on the stage. And in between every song, Phil would start talking. And it might be about how much Metallica sucks now, or it might be about boxing. And some of it was really funny and memorable, but some of it just went on. And I don't know if drugs and all that may have had something to do with it, probably.
Right.
But at some point, I just kind of went, all right, Phil, that's good. Let's hear some songs.
I'm so wasted.
However, if it's me on stage with Galactic Cowboys these days, I'm fine with Ben talking as long as he wants in between songs. Because I'm not in nearly as good a shape as I used to be, and honestly, I can use the breather.
This man needs to be sent to a nursing home!
Now, Jimmy is a musician himself, and he says he understands the expectations that are put on musicians to always perform without making mistakes. And he says with all the words and arrangements and musical notes that you have to remember, the odds that you're not going to screw up are just astronomical. And so he says, "Hey, Monty, have you ever performed a perfect error-free show?"
Yeah, right.
Well, Jimmy, I can think of maybe one show in my entire career that I didn't have any mistakes, but all the rest, yeah. When you're playing live, you're dealing with all kinds of things like lights shining right into your eyes, or the sound is so bad that you can't hardly hear what you're playing. And then sometimes, for unknown reasons, my mind will just go completely blank and I'll forget the next line of the song.
What a dork you are.
And so, yeah, I've forgotten words, I've hit the wrong fret while I'm jumping around like a maniac, but it's live, you know? It's not supposed to be perfect all the time. Well, that is, unless you're somebody like Billy Sheehan.
Screw that guy!
Or Rush, or Dream Theater.
Screw them too!
But I read an article with Steve Harris from Iron Maiden years and years ago, and he said that he makes at least one mistake a night. So if a guy that good can screw up occasionally, then I will guarantee you that I will.
You want to know why? You're a punk.
And finally, along those same lines, Jimmy asked if I had ever broken a string while on stage and had to go for my backup instrument. And the answer to that is no, I have never broken a bass string in all these years on stage. But I've had just about everything else go wrong. I've had wireless transmitters stop working in the middle of shows. I've had straps break. I've had cords and cables and pedals just all stop working while we were in front of people. And when GC was filming the I'm Not Amused video, we were out in the middle of the desert and I had this Kramer 8-string bass. And it's the same one I used when I was in The Awful Truth. And we had just barely started shooting the video and I was running around and all of a sudden the body of that bass just broke right in half. And I looked down and just went, what the hell? But fortunately, I had a backup, and I filmed with that. But weird things like that have always gone haywire for me when I get on stage. And to this day, I still have dreams almost every week where I'm on stage and I can't get my guitar in tune. Or I'm at a festival and there's a million people out there and I'm walking on stage and realize, oh, there aren't any strings on my guitar. And I swear to you, I'm not making this up, but last night I had a dream that I'm on stage with Guns N' Roses. And I'm trying to play and I suddenly realize, you know, I don't know any of these songs.
No!
And I'm trying to fake my way through it and Axel's kind of looking over there like, who's this guy? And I'm just freaking out, and I finally think, you know, maybe I should have practiced these songs.
Gee, you think?
And it was about then that I woke up and realized, oh, yeah, I'm not in Guns N' Roses.
No, you're not.
And yeah, so that was another one of my strange dreams, and thank you for all your questions, Jimmy G. Remember the whole Battle of the Bands thing I was doing on this show?
No.
Well, I bet you thought I forgot about that, didn't you?
I don't care.
Well, I did not.
I have never cared.
In fact, it's time to start round two. And I've narrowed it down to an Elite Eight. And today's matchup is between Robert in Richmond, Texas, and Brian Eckhart. And the winner of this matchup will move on to the next round. So let's get it going. First up with Robert in Richmond. And the name of the song is Perplexity Jones.
What distress in me, what a perplexity.
I like the riffs, I like the chunky guitar, and the song's got a nice structure to it. Good job, Robert. Nice, I love the ending on that song. But up next is Brian with his project, The Giggle Snort Motel. And the name of the song is Ninjas at a Drive-Thru. You know, I'll have to admit that I like this because it's kind of different. It's a little bit quirky and it reminds me of the stuff I wrote in college.
It's not in your business, let it be.
Okay, now to pick a winner, and this is a tough one because both songs had stuff I liked about them. But for the overall originality and great chorus, I'm going to go with Ninjas at the Drive-Thru. So congratulations, Brian Eckhard. You're going to the Final Four.
No one takes this seriously.
All right, I'm feeling good. Let's do another matchup. And this one is going to be between Chad and KC and Chris Atherton. And kicking it off will be Chad and KC with his band called the Leering Heathens. And this is Holes of Blood. Like I've said before, I've known Chad for years. I think I met him when he was like 18 or something. And over the years, I've watched him turn into a father and a family man. And yet, he's still rocking the heavy, depressing music. Way to go, Chad.
The guy's a lunatic.
Facing off against Chad today will be Chris Atherton and his band Radio 9. The song is Blue Dream. You know, this has got a nice rawness to it. Reminds me of the Misfits. And I like those background vocals. Kind of reminds me of the Wild Hearts. So I am going to proclaim Chris Atherton as the winner of this round. And he will be moving on to the semifinals.
Whoop-dee-doo!
Okay, time to do some more top tens, and this next one is from Lacey Mucklow. And I know you're confused because you're probably sitting there going, wait a minute, Monty, that sounds kind of like that might be a woman. And well, you would be correct. You see, Lacey is not only one of the few women who listen to this show, she is also a fan of prog rock.
Nerdy.
And last year, Lacey and her husband drove to Atlanta or somewhere like that and attended this prog rock convention slash festival. And it was called Prog Power USA. And the deal is that a bunch of prog rock bands play at this thing, and prog rock fans from all over the country and all over the world come to it.
They're nerd beyond nerd beyond nerd. It's just like nerd piled on top of nerd with geek thrown in and mixed into the whole thing.
So anyway, Lacey has sent me a list of her top 10 favorite things about Prog Power USA. And her 10th favorite thing is that it was a festival that was held inside with air conditioning.
How amazing that is.
Yeah, I bet that was nice. Lindsay and I go to Warped Tour every year and about die of heat exhaustion. Warped Tour also doesn't have number 9, free cupcakes for the first 36 fans.
Woo! I'm in heaven!
Yeah, free cupcakes would rule, as would number 8, a festival not being too overcrowded and or so large that you can never see the bands. Yeah, I hate that too. And I'm guessing at a Prague festival, you can probably sit or stand anywhere you want.
Oh, hey.
Okay, sorry, Lacey. I couldn't resist.
It was uncalled for.
And I'll just move on to number 7, which is watching Orton Ogun perform with their intimidating stage clothes. Okay, I've never heard of that band, but Lacey was also thrilled to see Michael Erickson sing with Pagan's Mind in a surprise appearance.
Oh, how exciting.
At number 5, Lacey's next favorite thing at Prog Power USA was meeting people from around the world who share similar musical tastes and seeing and making new friends.
Geeks!
Number 4 is hearing John Oliva sing Streets, a rock opera with Broken Ribs.
Awesome.
Okay, I'm assuming Broken Ribs is a physical condition with John Oliva and not just the name of a prog rock band I've never heard of.
That's right.
Regardless, number 3 is hearing great music and seeing bands that may have never stepped foot to perform in the USA otherwise. Number 2 is hanging out with all the band members around center stage and all the meet and greet opportunities. But at number 1, Lacey's favorite thing about Prog Power 2014, finding out that Anubis Gate is going to play at Prog Power USA 2015.
Oh, yeah!
Well, that is just awesome, Lacey. Sounds like you had a great time, and thanks so much for that list. It's rare to find women that like obscure, heavy music, and you are very cool. But moving on to the next list, you heard from him earlier, he had a question, but now he's back with a top 10. It's Chris in Baltimore.
Oh my God!
And this is a list of his top 10 Christian bands that I might even like.
Jesus! Oh!
Yeah, I've kind of made it known over the years that I'm not a huge fan of the Christian rock genre. I think that a lot of it comes off very contrived, very preachy. A lot of those bands aren't very original. And a great deal of it is just downright lame. But outside of that, I love it.
That's fantastic.
You see, I actually think the Christian music industry is brilliant. In fact, they are marketing geniuses. Because what better way to get people to buy your product than to tell them, hey, don't buy anything out there in the world because it's dangerous. Only buy our stuff. Meanwhile, these bands and Christian record labels are telling everybody, hey, we're a ministry. We're all about saving souls. But when it comes down to it, it's all about money and business. And if you're not making that label money, you're out of business. So I really don't have a lot of good things to say about Christian music. But that said, here's Chris's list of 10 Christian bands that even I might like. And it starts out at number 10 with August Burns Red. And yeah, they're real heavy. You think I might like them, but no.
Oh.
And it really has nothing to do with the fact that they're Christians, if they are. Nor does it have anything to do with their musicality, because I think they're actually really talented. But I saw them last year open for Asking Alexandria, and I thought they sucked. They did not play a single song that I could even vaguely enjoy because of the lack of melody. I mean, I'm sure they're good guys, but August Burns Red? No. August burns very uninterestingly to me.
God should send you to hell.
Now, continuing on with Chris's list, at number 9, it's Sleeping Giant. Number 8 is Project 86. And number 7 is Cutlass.
Who are those people?
Okay, I don't believe I've heard of any of them, but I have heard of number 6, Pillar, and I have not heard of number 5, December Radio. But I have heard of number 4, Reliant K, but I did not like them.
You're mean.
I've also heard number 3, Disciple, and they were okay. And I've also heard of number 2 on Chris's list, Audio Adrenaline. And yes, I was aware that they were a Christian band, but in fairness, even if they worshiped the devil, I still wouldn't like them.
Have you no decency?
And finally, at number 1 on Chris's list of Christian bands that even a heathen like me might like, it's Third Day. Okay, well, Chris says, Third Day is my favorite band, to which I say, really? Third Day is your favorite band? Really? Okay, well, cool. And good job, Chris. And like I said, I'm not a big fan of Christian music now, but when I was a kid, I actually listened to quite a bit of it. It's all my parents would really let me listen to. And there was a guy named Andre Crouch that I was a big fan of, and I wrote him a letter. And lo and behold, he wrote me a really nice letter back, and I always thought that was so cool of him. And years later, I heard rumors that maybe he was a drug addict or whatever. And I thought, you know, we're all human, we all make mistakes. And I was really sad the other day when I heard that Andre Crouch had passed away. So I try to judge musicians on their music and not what they believe in. Case in point, As I Lay Dying. I kept hearing over and over, yeah, they're a Christian band. And I'm like, whatever, they rock. And then their singer ends up going to prison for plotting to kill his wife. To which I say, well, that's really too bad, but I still like some of their tunes. And that's why I'm going to play out with one of their songs. It's called Defender.
Hallelujah.
If you want to get a hold of me, you can check out my website, montycalvin.net, or find me on Facebook. But that's going to do it for me for now. So until next time, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me. And
rock on.
Fire! The end.